The Institute for Self-Reliant Agriculture is making changes and valuable contributions to the health and well-being of the less developed world around us. Join founder Michael Bumstead today on Growing People from the Ground Up. Michael, his co-host Tom Rockwood, and guest speakers will show you what's being done now and how you can help.
Welcome to Growing People from the Ground Up. We're delighted that you've joined with us today. I'm sure you will really enjoy our program this day. We are taking you to the country of Kenya and talking about what is being done in the country of Kenya through one of our partner organizations to help these little children to survive to adulthood and to live and be able to reach their full potential. So this show is also about Americans, about people in the developed world throughout wherever they live, because there's a lot of people out there that want to become self-sufficient themselves. The principles we talk about on this show not only are interesting to the developed world for the interest sake of helping these people, but they can learn from this. So this show is twofold, basically. We learn about what's being done in different parts of the world, such as Kenya today, but also applies to those who want to be involved to help us further this program, and also for those who are interested in putting these principles into use on their own backyards. Next week, we'll be talking about that specifically in our own backyards. The challenge we have in this world today is that little farmers cannot compete with large ag business. Therefore, they have a difficulty of feeding their family nutritionally. And so we take them out of the market and we take the same little plot of land that they had previously, and we give them a multi-crop scenario so that they can grow everything that they need to feed their family in an efficient way and in a nutritional way. Tom, since we're going to the land of Kenya, the country of Kenya, do you have any background or information for us that you'd like to share with us?
Yes, thank you, Mike. I'm excited to hear your guests who have actually been there, but let's talk a little bit about a baseline. First of all, for those that don't know, the country of Kenya is about the size of two Nevadas. So if you put Nevada side by side, it'd be about that size. It's located, of course, below the equator in eastern Africa, and it borders the Indian Ocean along with the countries of Somalia and Tanzania. It does share some waterfront property along Lake Victoria, which is the second largest freshwater lake on the planet. The challenges have to do a little bit with the climate. It does have a varying climate from tropical along the coast to the arid interior closer to Mount Kenya, which the country is named for. But some of the other countries' challenges, although it's a regional hub for trade and finance in East Africa, Kenya has been hampered by corruption in its 50 years of independence. As in many parts of Africa, of course, tribal conflicts hamper effective governing, with conflicts with elections just 5 years ago resulting in over 1,000 fatalities and over 600,000 people displaced due to ethnic issues. Also, the country's reliance upon several primary goods whose prices have remained low, like tea, horticultural products, and coffee is also very susceptible to drought. However, one of the most recent concerns I found has to do with a economy that's practiced in the country called Kadogo. And a new study by the World Bank questions the economic usefulness of this Kadogo economy, saying it only serves to perpetuate poverty among low-income earners. What it is, Mike, is the concept is has gained prominence since the late 1990s due to the growing poverty among most Kenyans. And what's happened is the grocery stores have found that they've lost business because the poor cannot afford to buy food products in their normally packaged quantities. And so what they've done is they set up kiosks where instead of buying 5 pounds of sugar, for instance, they'll repackage the 5 pounds of sugar into small sandwich bags and sell those. The problem is they sell those in these little kiosks and they mark the food product up as much as 2 and 3 times what you would pay if you were able to buy the 5 pound of sugar. That's probably the reason why here in our country, Costco is so important or so popular, because you think you're buying in bigger quantities, you're getting a better deal. Well, just think of having to rely, because of the small amount of money you have, to have to pay for these very small quantities. The study carried out this past year shows that low-income earners, those that earn less than $1.50 a day, end up paying as much as 2 and 3 times what the middle and upper income earners pay for that same food, simply because of the size of quantity that they're paying for. Though the smaller quantities are more affordable to consumers in the slums, they are paying considerably more. That has aided an inflation rate that's been rising for the last 13 months and was 19.72% in November alone, wreaking havoc on budgets. So while it's next to impossible to do away with the Kodogo economy, given the critical role it plays, it is unfairly rising the cost of feeding those that can least afford it. It's a sad situation.
You know, Tom, that principle right there that you just explained really is one of the reasons why our program is so important to these people throughout the world.
Absolutely.
They cannot compete with ag business, but they cannot afford to buy the food in the market as well. It's a double hammer on them.
Yep.
So this is why we are doing what we're doing throughout the world. Let's get into talking about the country of Kenya with our guest, Brett Van Leeuwen. He's the president of Coins for Kenya. He has helped over 6,000 children throughout the southeast corner of Kenya with his program. And it's an interesting story of how he got started in this program. Brett, are you with us?
I'm here. Good morning.
Welcome to Growing People from the Ground Up. And also for our audience, Coins for Kenya is a partner organization that we're working with in Kenya, and you will discover that throughout this program. How did you get connected with Kenya, Brett?
Gosh, initially it was through a friend of mine who had discussed a trip that he had just gone on, a humanitarian trip. I had been interested in humanitarian aid, but I really didn't know how to go about it, and so this gave me an avenue to kind of have that opportunity to have the adventure, and I really thought it was going to be more of that than what it turned out to be. And my wife and I took our first trip together, and that was 28 trips ago.
Well, tell us about the people of Kenya.
Well, as Tom was talking just now, you know, a lot of times I hear stuff about Kenya and, oh, some of it's a stretch and some of it isn't necessarily conducive for as a topic for the whole country, but little pieces. But what he was just talking about truly is accurate. The small quantities and the cost of those small quantities to the poor. This is a country that has pretty good resources. Unfortunately, they're located in just a couple of hubs, and the millions and millions of people who don't live in those hubs just suffer. They are people who do nothing more than try and survive each and every day.
What? How does it affect you when you're there? And you had a number of trips there, I'm sure. How does it affect you when you see the struggles and the challenges that face these people in your program?
Well, I guess that there's two ways to look at it. We have what we call our peaches and our pits. And when we have expeditions, we get together at the end of the day and discuss what each of us have seen. Some of us see something and it's a real peach. Somebody can see the same thing and think it's a pit. But I'll tell you, when you go there, you see the desperation, you see the poverty, but at the same point, because of the programs that have been implemented, we've taken a very small part of Kenya and turned it into a prosperous little area just because of the fundamentals we've put into place. And, you know, when you bring bring the ability to dream people or to think ahead and to not just survive is so invigorating and fulfilling that it kind of gives me both feelings of I've got to do more, but I also recognize that what we've done is tremendous.
We're having a little bit of difficulty hearing Brett. Hopefully we can fix that over the next break. But, Brett, if we can get you back on a little bit louder on the volume, tell us about some of the projects and some of the things you're actually doing with the people there in Kenya.
Well, the fundamentals of life, obviously, are food, water, and shelter. The shelter is taken care of. These people live in mud huts. There are no, there's no electricity. There's no running water. They walk for miles to gather their water from some pretty deplorable places. And so what we've done is we've replaced the shelter with education, because education is truly what provides them a key to the future and to be able to compete with those people that live in the hubs. So what we've done is we've built schools, libraries, science centers. We just finished our 29th classroom, our school. We've, like you said, we've got our 6,000 kids there. So we've taken a pretty good care of that, and now we're focusing more on cleaner water, more accessible water, and then the agricultural piece, which obviously you guys are helping out tremendously on that.
Okay, you have built 26 different school buildings?
Yeah, actually, we just finished our 29th. So
we'll take a short break and we'll come right back and continue this discussion with Brett Van Leeuwen. Thank you.
This is the Voice America Green Living Channel. Spread the green.
In a world where parents struggle to feed their own children, the Institute for Self-Reliant Agriculture is dedicated to teaching families how to grow, what to eat, and how to become self-sufficient. By giving people the right tools to grow their food, we're not just growing crops, we are growing people. Your host, Michael Bumstead, president of Self-Reliant Agriculture, share stories of struggle, success, and perseverance that families and communities experience in South America and other parts of the world on the weekly internet radio program Growing People from the Ground Up. Through the Institute for Self-Reliant Agriculture's See the Change program, you can select a family to sponsor and, with frequent updates, watch as they progress towards achieving goals to provide for themselves and feed their families. The work Self-Reliant Agriculture does today impacts individuals' lives tomorrow. Please visit us at www.selfrelientagriculture.org to read about recent projects, see videos, and view photos of families and the communities where they live. That's selfrelientagriculture.org.
All around the outermost rim of the shield, he set the mighty stream of the river Oceanus,
creating Achilles' shield in Homer's The Iliad, Book 18.
Rachel Carson in The Sea Around Us said,
"All at last return to the sea, to Oceanus, the ocean river, like the ever-flowing stream of time, the beginning and the end."
Moyer's Environmental Dialogues with Dr. Rob Moyer offers lively dialogue and revealing narrative inquiry into how individuals are overcoming obstacles and creating a greener and blue planet Earth. Tune in Wednesdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on the Green Living Channel.
Learn how to become a part of the solution, not the problem. Participate in the discussion by calling 1-888-346-9141. That's toll free, 1-888-346-9141. This is the Voice America Green Living Channel. Spread the green.
You're tuned in to Growing People from the Ground Up with your host, Michael Bumstead, and his roster of special guests and weekly contributors. To find out more about the Self-Reliant Agriculture Program, or if you have a question or comment that we can address on a future program, please send an email to comments@selfreliantagriculture.org. Now, back to this week's program.
Welcome back to Growing People from the Ground Up. We were just talking to Brett Van Leeuwen, Coins for Kenya. He's located in the southeast corner of Kenya. Is that right, Brett?
Yeah, we're not too far geographically. We're not too far from Mombasa. It takes about 90 minutes for us to drive there in a car, but it's only maybe 30 miles.
Right. Okay. 90 minutes to go 30 miles. Okay. And in that area of Kenya, the part that Tom was talking about at the beginning of the show, during the elections and the difficulties and people who were being displaced and so on, that portion of Kenya where you're located at, you've not seen any of that, have you?
Well, what's interesting, that's a great question, but what's kind of interesting, and I guess it was a great demonstration of our influence in the area that we serve, a lot of nonprofit NGOs, what they'll do is they'll go into an area and they'll do a project, and then they'll go to another area and do another project, and another area and do another one, where ours is completely focused in one geographic area. Now, our area has grown because of our success and because of our activities to about 200 square kilometers, so it's not small. But when the elections occurred 5 years ago, we knew that there was going to be potential problems. And we went in front of the village chiefs and the political leaders of that area, and we basically told them that having any type of violence come out of the results of the elections, doesn't matter what they are, is just not acceptable, and would be a clear indicator to Coins that you know they don't value our relationship, that they don't want us there, because we're not going to support that kind of activity. And they really took it to heart. So when all of the violence was happening around the country, our place never bat an eye. There was never even an unkind word, even though we have different tribal members within our community. It was just basically, I think a real good sign that told us that what we do is important, how we act is important, how we progress is obviously vital, and so we didn't have any problems whatsoever.
Well, that's great. You have 6,000 children in 7 schools, so these are very large schools. Can you describe how these kids live and what they eat on a daily basis?
Well, the schools that we build are very rudimentary. I mean, when we arrived there, a lot of children were meeting underneath trees. You know, you get a baobab tree, which is a big tree, and it provides a little bit of shade and protection from the elements, but it's a tree. And the lucky ones would actually have a classroom made of mud with thatch roof. And so what we did was we recognized that we had to provide them with a facility in which they could prosper, in which they could really gain their education. And so we'd go to a place like the village of Chikomani, and they were meeting, there was about 40, 45 kids meeting under a baobab tree, and the teacher was, she had a piece of wood that had been painted with chalkboard paint. It was all broken up, but it was a piece of wood, and it was nailed with a piece of string the tree that they were meeting under, and it was flapping in the wind as she was trying to teach these young minds just some basics. And we looked at that, and we just had to do something. So we, as we do with every village, we invite them to do their part. We don't give anything for free, and the villagers had to bring all the sand up from a river for our construction. They had to pound rocks with hammers and make them into tiny little rocks, and that was our gravel. And they have to come and provide all of the unskilled labor, as well as 10% of the actual cost of the construction. So when all that was done, then we arrive and we'll construct the building. Sometimes we've had villages that are a year and a half, 2 years in making all of those preparations. Chicomani came to us 4 months later and said, "We're ready to go. Here's everything." And I asked the chief of the village, I said, "Now, how did you do it in such a short time?" And without really thinking it was that big of a deal, he said, "You know, every man, woman, and child in Chicomani went without food for an entire day. And
oh,
the
my
money
gosh.
And the money that they were able to save, or the food that they used, was then sold out in the marketplace, and that was how they raised their money."
Hey, Mike, can I just mention,
yes,
I've noticed on Brett's website, Coins for Kenya, and Coins, Brett, that's with a K, correct?
It is with a K, thank you.
CoinsforKenya.org, and there's some great pictures of the building of these schools, the before and after, I was very impressed with.
Well, thanks.
You know, the part about ownership, I want to get back to that if we have time, but right now what I'd like to do is play an audio clip. We have an interview that was conducted with one of your teachers there, Brett, Emily Umunzi. And she, I'm not sure what school she was in, but if we could play that audio clip now, talking about some of her children, and then we'll come back to the story that you're referring to.
Great.
You're talking about ownership, of how important that is to have these people do what they can in order to have skin in the game, you might say. I think that's an important principle that most NGOs do not comprehend, and a lot of people in the developed world don't comprehend the importance of that as well. That actually is how you progress the people quicker, isn't it, Brett?
Well, without question. If they don't feel that this is their school, there's just a different spirit about it. We actually, when we first started, I think it was our second year, we built a classroom building alongside another classroom building that was built the prior year. This was a school that was growing by leaps and bounds right as the education became free. And so the classrooms just exploded with children because they no longer had to pay. Well, a Danish group came in and built a classroom building, a group that I don't even know their name, and I'm not so sure that they recognize who they are even in the village anymore. And we built ours based upon what I told you prior, and we built ours right next door to it. A wind came through, and it was a year, the school was a year old, the wind came through and literally took pieces of both roofs off. And I got a call from the Danish people, and they said, "Who are you having repair your roof, or how are you dealing with that?" And I said, "What roof?" They hadn't even contacted me because this is their school. They built it, and so they repaired it. The Danes came in, gave it to them, and so they just basically assumed that that was their school and it was their responsibility to fix it.
Right. You lift people out of a hole by extending an arm to them, but they have to do effort to get themselves out of the hole as well. That's a very important principle. I believe in that. We use that also in South America, Brett, when we go to Peru and Ecuador, these areas. We expect people to do certain things for the things that we give them, and it's an important principle. What are your long-term goals for Coins of Kenya?
Well, I guess The long-term goal would be to move on. You know, we have created a system that works. Our education is, when we arrived, was the absolute. We had our test scores for our children, and they do a national testing, so they know everybody and where they stack up against other schools. And our schools are at the absolute bottom. And over the last 7 years, now 7 of the 10 highest scoring schools are within our service area. So we know that the goodness that we've done. We've got self-sustaining programs in some micro-businesses. We've got, obviously, the agriculture and the water that we're providing along with the partnerships that we have with you and the communities. And, you know, there's a point where we're going to tip and we'll need to move on because they are going to be self-sufficient. And that's the goal.
That's exactly right. You're trying to put yourself out of business in a way. That's wonderful.
Well, we'll put ourselves out of business in that area anyway.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's going to be very difficult for you and I to put ourselves totally out of business, unfortunately. But that's our goal, is to help these people lift themselves and to become fully self-sufficient on their own. We are going to be talking about the actual elements of your program of how we move the people. You know, we've talked about the schools, and we've talked about some of the things that you've helped them to build for themselves and that type of thing. But we're going to be taking a break in a few minutes. But when we come back off of this break, what I'd like to do, Brad, if it's okay with you, is to move right into, maybe we can have the audio clip right after the break about that interview with the teacher, because it's a fascinating interview. And then finish up on the schools and then move right into the agricultural element of how we're getting these people to feed themselves efficiently. That's where our program has been benefiting your program, I believe, and I'd like to discuss that.
Yeah.
So take a break.
Great.
And we'll
Emily,
come back.
I got to tell you, Emily Umazi, she's a great teacher, and she's in the village of Miani, and, which is where our special needs school is, and she does a great job not only with her classrooms but volunteering at the special needs school.
Okay, we'll take a break, and we'll be right back.
Thanks.
Listening to the Voice America Green Living Channel for the latest in the sustainability and green movement for all of our futures today and tomorrow. The Voice America Green Living Channel. Spread the green.
In a world where parents struggle to feed their own children, the Institute for Self-Reliant Agriculture is dedicated to teaching families how to grow, what to eat, and how to become self-sufficient. By giving people the right tools to grow their food, we're not just growing crops, we are growing people. Your host, Michael Bumstead, president of Self-Reliant Agriculture, shares stories of struggle, success, and perseverance that families and communities experience in South America and other parts of the world on the weekly internet radio program, Growing People from the Ground Up. Through the Institute for Self-Reliant Agriculture's See the Change program, you can select a family to sponsor and, with frequent updates, watch as they progress towards achieving goals to provide for themselves and feed their families. The work Self-Reliant Agriculture does today impacts individuals' lives tomorrow. Please visit us at www.selfrelientagriculture.org to read about recent projects, see videos, and view photos of families and the communities where they live. That's selfreliantagriculture.org.
Tune in to the Voice America Variety Channel on the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Voice America Variety broadcasts a diverse array of topics, reaching a global community. Our experts come from all walks of life, and the topics they discuss are everything from current events, arts and entertainment, leadership, parenting, relationships, self-improvement, career advice, and a variety of other topics. Check us out today. You're sure to find something of interest. Voice America Variety. Talk on today's hot topics.
This is the Voice America Green Living Channel, helping to promote a sustainable future for us all.
You're tuned in to Growing People from the Ground Up with your host, Michael Bumstead, and his roster of special guests and weekly contributors. To find out more about the Self-Reliant Agriculture Program, or if you have a question or comment that we can address on a future program, please send an email to comments@selfreliantagriculture.org. Now, back to this week's program.
Welcome back to Growing People from the Ground Up. We were talking with Brett Van Leeuwen, Coins for Kenya, about the school programs and how he has helped them to help them build their own schools. Fascinating concept and fascinating program. What I'd like to do, if we are ready with that audio clip, I'd like to play that audio clip. It's an interview with a school teacher. Her name is Emily Umazi. And Brett, what school is she in?
She teaches in the village of Miani, which is a beautiful little hilltop, and way, way off in the distance, you can actually see the Indian Ocean.
Okay, let's go ahead and play that video clip. I think you'll find it, or the audio clip. I think you'll find it very fascinating.
A class of 75.
So Emily Amazi, you work with 75 children with Coins for Kenya.
Yeah.
Tell us about what you do.
Okay, I have a class of 75, and two of my children are special needs children. They are so slow, they don't go at the same rate the others do, and I really need to work on them individually. And the rest of the class, they sit down, so I cannot reach each child individually. So I do it at my free time.
On your free time, you'll work with the children individually?
Yeah, especially those who are slow learners. I can't help them in class because there are so many. So if it's an exercise that I've given, I do follow up later. That is when I'm free.
And of the 75 children that you work with, how many need special attention?
I have 15 who are slow learners, really slow learners, and two who are physically handicapped. So, 15.
Tell us about some of the struggles your kids have with malnutrition.
They eat almost the same meal every day. They have corn porridge in the morning, and then at school we provide maize and beans. And in the evening, they have ugali, which is made out of corn, and maybe some small fish. Yeah, that is what they have. And others go hungry and at times even faint in school because they didn't have any meal at all.
Do you have any stories of that happening with your class?
Yeah. I had a pupil who fainted when she was walking to from school to home, and then we inquired if she had eaten anything because we thought maybe she was sick, and she said she had the last meal in school, that was the previous day. So we gave her some little food that was there, and she was up. Yeah, she walked home.
Do you think that that's common for kids in your class, or do you think it was just that one time?
No, it happens that at times children even eat some other things we don't understand from the bush and they get sick.
What sorts of things do they eat there?
Yeah, they climb the mango trees that are around and eat raw mangoes. And so they are hungry, they have not eaten, they eat the raw mangoes, and their stomachs, no, they don't work well with them, so they fall sick in school. Yeah.
So why do you think it is that the families aren't able to provide enough food?
Most of the heads of the family are peasants, so they have these small jobs. At times they don't get anything, or they're just farmers, and at times it doesn't rain, so they have nothing to eat. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for sharing that audio clip with us. We have with us right now a vice president, Tom Rasmussen, that was with Brett Van Leeuwen a couple of weeks ago in Kenya. Tom, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Can you describe what you saw that relates to this story that we just heard?
Well, yes, I talked with the teacher, Emily, and she related that story to me of the girl who fainted and turned out she hadn't eaten anything that day or most of the day before. So she was walking home when and she just passed out, mostly from lack of hunger of or lack of food, of course. And that is something that is, to one degree or another, seems to be prevalent in the schools. They don't get enough to eat, and they certainly don't get enough nutritious food, as we've talked about previously.
Right. You know, a lot of people will go for a 24-hour period fasting here and that type of thing. It's not that uncommon for people to go without food for one day, but I think the issue here is this child didn't have a nutritional diet on an ongoing basis. So going without food, without any foundation, is really the issue of why she really fainted. She's not only eating the last 24 hours, but she wasn't eating properly prior to that. Brett, can you give us an idea of what your plans are to fill a gap on the diets of these children?
Well, it's become more and more of a problem as more children arrive. The rations are split. You know, it used to be that you'd only have, you know, maybe 500 or 600 children in your school, and you were allotted a certain amount of food by the government, and now you've got 1,000 kids, and you don't have any increase. So it has to be divided. A lot of the children, because of their siblings at home, don't have anything to eat. They'll only eat half of a meal, and then they're expected to take whatever leftover they have and share it with their siblings at home. So it's a real problem, and it's tangible from the mere fact that our children are thin. They don't have reserves, as you kind of alluded to go without any meal whatsoever. But the studies that have been recently done in our area show that even though our children aren't hungry, so to speak, because they do have some beans or they do have this ugali, which is basically a cornmeal base, their stomachs may have something in it, but they absolutely are malnutritioned in every aspect. The studies show that calcium, all the vitamins, all the minerals that are vital to bone development, brain development, and also brain function, they're just so far behind the curve that it's tough to catch up unless we do something.
Right. That study you're referring to is a study that we did with you in partnership with you through Dr. Paul Johnston. And I think that study, it was done, in May or June of this year?
Correct.
And that study, I think, was a shocker to your group of people as well as ours, is how malnutritioned these kids are. How do we eliminate that malnutrition? What's the plans to do that?
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting. After that discovery of how malnutritioned they were, I did something for the first time in my own life, which is I grew a garden just so I could talk to these people about, you know, what they could do in order to change this blight that we have. So what we've done is made a, obviously through the SRA, because we would never have been able to do it without you guys. We had to go and purchase some land over there, from the mere fact that we couldn't go to a family and say, hey, we want you to try out these new crops, ones that are actually more nutritional, less drought resistant, or more drought resistant. And so if I came to you as a farmer and said, hey, I want you to implement this, something that your family has done is grow maize for decades and decades, and that's what you've survived on, for me to come to you and ask or suggest that you change that mode is scary. That's what they survive on, and if it fails, the potential for that family to go without food and the suffering and the consequences of that are so great that it would be very difficult to convince them to just follow us blindly. So through Tom Rasmussen and the SRA, we've developed programs where, in fact, we're not just talking to these people, but we're showing them the success through the SRA programs. We've done this on our demonstration plots, and now Tom and his group are over there implementing the rotational gardens, which is going to be the program that's really going to set this place on its ear.
Well, Brett, you kind of answered a question I had. As successful as your program is, you still have to have some resistance when you go into a community and say, hey, this is what we'd like you to do, after they've been doing something the same way for so long. You talked about the individual families and how buying this property helped. Do you see any other challenges when you work with community leaders?
Well, you know, if you can go in and solve the problems, you know, we've been there so long, we know the people, we know the tribes, we know their traditions, we know their hesitations, and we really are part of their community. They don't consider us outsiders anymore. So for us to come in and suggest something, they're all ears. But at the same point, they want to see that it's going to be successful. So therefore, what we've done with a purchase of land, we're going to give families that are being identified by the SRA as those families more in need. Do the children have both their parents, one parent? Do they have their own land? Things like that, they're going into this decision. And then the families that are identified as the higher risk, they are being provided a plot of land separate from what they have. They can continue what they know, but what they will do.
Brett, we're going to have to take a break here. We'll continue with this discussion of how we help these families become nutritionally self-sufficient. We'll take a break and we'll be right back to you. Thank
Great.
You very much.
Listening to the Voice America Green Living Channel for the latest in the sustainability and green movement for all of our futures today and tomorrow. The Voice America Green Living Channel. Spread the green.
In a world where parents struggle to feed their own children, the Institute for Self-Reliant Agriculture is dedicated to teaching families how to grow, what to eat, and how to become self-sufficient. By giving people the right tools to grow their food, we're not just growing crops, we are growing people. Your host, Michael Bumstead, president of Self-Reliant Agriculture, shares stories of struggle, success, and perseverance that families and communities experience in South America and other parts of the world on the weekly internet radio program, Growing People from the Ground Up. Through the Institute for Self-Reliant Agriculture's See the Change program, you can select a family to sponsor and, with frequent updates, watch as they progress towards achieving goals to provide for themselves and feed their families. The work Self-Reliant Agriculture does today impacts individuals' lives tomorrow. Please visit us at www.selfreliantagriculture.org to read about recent projects, see videos, and view photos of families and the communities where they live. That's selfreliantagriculture.org.
This is the Voice America Green Living Channel, helping to provide a sustainable future for us all.
You're tuned in to Growing People from the Ground Up with your host, Michael Bumstead, and his roster of special guests and weekly contributors. To find out more about the Self-Reliant Agriculture Program, or if you have a question or comment that we can address on a future program, please send an email to comments@selfreliantagriculture.org. Now, back to this week's program.
Well, thank you for staying with us. We were just talking to Brett Van Leeuwen, Coins for Kenya. That's with a K, Coins. About how he helps these families become nutritionally self-sufficient. And Brett, I almost had to be rude to interrupt you, and I'm sorry about that, but we had to take that break. Maybe we can continue that discussion and get a little more detail on that. You want to finish your story that I interrupted you on?
No, not a problem. I just think it's important for people to understand that what's going on now is we're showing these villagers who lead such a humble life how to become self-sufficient. We're not just handing things out to them. We're giving them a kickstart. We have a program, and for $100, they get the seed, fertilizer, herbicide. They get the maintenance and everything else that they need just to get them started. And the SRA is providing the education, providing them with methodologies, providing them with all of the instructional aspect of things. And these small rotational gardens that are, I mean, really, they're 6 by 40, basically. And we're showing that these people can rotate through them and feed their entire family nutritional meals. And it becomes self-sufficient because they have to give a percentage of what they raise back to the organization, and then what they give in crop is sold at the market to buy more seed, bring it back, and continue with them. And the good thing is these people will have an opportunity. They're only on the property for basically 18 months. And then they have to go and make room for another family to come in, and they go home and implement everything that they've learned. But it's powerful stuff.
When you say SRA, I just want to clarify that for our audience. SRA stands for the Institute for Self-Reliant Agriculture, which is our program that we're partnering with you on to help on implement this. The rotational garden is a concept that's fascinating. We will have a guest on in a couple of weeks that talk about the details of that rotational garden. And you also mentioned how these people give back part of the product that you have implemented and helped them with, so that you can take that to take to other families. So it's a perpetual program as well. I really like that concept. Can you tell us about the chickens? What's happening there with a few chickens that our two employees there are helping implement there in country with you?
Yeah, we've got a great flock of chickens right now, and what the program will be is basically providing meat for these kids. Dr. Johnson out of BYU, he stress the importance of animal iron that helps with brain function. So it's just vital that our kids have meat intake from time to time. So the chickens, being that they're the easiest to raise, these people know what they are, they know how to do the basics. But the SRA programs change a lot of things to make sure that these chickens are not just free-ranging and running around and getting sick and all that kind of stuff. So that once the people go through an educational process from the SRA employees who are on the ground, who live there, once they go through that, then we'll provide them with 6 chickens. And 6 chickens gives them the ability to have their own brood. And what we'll do, we give them a little bit of a hand up, but 3 months down the line, they must give us 6 chickens back, and we get to choose them. 3 months later, 6 chickens back. 3 months later, 6 chickens back. So it really costs them. There's a pretty substantial percentage rate, but those chickens are then given to other families, and they're taught to do the same thing. So with the educational aspect and the kickstart with the animals or the vegetables, whatever, they have to give back. It's the only way it'll survive, become self-sustaining. It's the only way that these guys will learn how to feed themselves properly.
Right. In 30 seconds, Brett, can you tell us how it makes you feel when you've taken these people in Kenya, not only helping them with the schools and the buildings, but now helping them to be able to feed their families in an efficient and nutritional way? How does that make you feel?
It goes without saying. The fulfilling nature of this whole work is without, in any language that I speak, without words. I can't express it. To be able to be the answer to someone's prayer and to have people step up to the plate and help us be the answer to these people's prayers is truly something. When you have a mother that looks at you, grabs your hand in her calloused hands, and thanks you through her eyes because she can't speak your language, it's powerful.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I've been there. I've walked that. We have Tom Rasmussen with us that was just in country there with you, Brett. I've asked him to highlight a family and give us some closing thoughts in about the next 3 minutes about his experience in there in Kenya. Tom, would you share with your thoughts with us?
Yeah, I actually want to talk about a couple of families. When I was there in July, we were up at the Gona School, G-O-N-A, one of Brett's schools, and I asked three young girls in their health club when they had last eaten meat. And they looked at each other and then finally responded, sometime last year. So sometime months and months previously, they'd had a little portion of meat, probably at a funeral celebration or something. Other than that, their diet was strictly corn, in essence. So we were up at that school here just a few weeks ago, and we were putting in a rotational garden. The health club, about 40 students, helped us build it. It only took us about 2 hours. We put that together. You remember the story of the girl who fainted on her way home from school. Many of these kids who don't eat, there is no lunch at that school, so they have to go home maybe 2 miles, and they won't stay at school even if there's no food at home because it's sort of a shame factor. So they walk home and walk back having eaten nothing at lunch and burned up all those calories. So now that school is going to produce food right there at the school, and our Patrick and Edison, our workers there, are going to teach the families around that school how to build the gardens also. So we're looking at the success down there at the Coin Center with 100 families. We're looking at more families out at the school who are going to benefit. And and Patrick, I have to say, when I asked him about breeding chickens, he's taken 24 chickens, and he tells me that by the end of January, he'll have about 1,000 chickens out of that, and so far he's doing it. He has several hundred now that are in nests with the chickens, and he has quite a talent for turning 24 chickens into 1,000. And several families, as I was there walking by our little chicken coop, were stopping to ask, can you tell me how to do that? So what Brett was talking about, we're going to see displayed over and over again as these families start producing enough chicken to have for themselves and to sell in the market.
That's wonderful. That's where the rubber meets the road. When we're actually helping these people become self-sufficient on their own, it's where the smiles of the parents come on their faces, and it's worth $1 million to me. Next week, we are going to have a nationally recognized expert and bring this discussion of nutritionally self-sufficient back here to the United States. We will be talking with Marjorie Wildcraft. She's a nationally recognized expert about growing your own food in your backyard. Until then, have a wonderful week, and we'll see you next week on Growing People from the Ground Up.
Thank you for tuning in to Growing People from the Ground Up. Please join your host, Michael Bumstead, co-host Tom Rockwood, and their guests next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Green Living Channel. We'll talk again next week.
What do you think of the price of gas these days?
I can't tell you.